Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here it is, a minute past the hour on this Friday, the third day of April 2015. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you go if you want to jump into the chat room and join at this particular moment. Anatole Jug of Punch, labor man and inveterate veteran, indefatigable chat room moderator, and Horn Malloy Skype group moderator of longstanding, Sparky, who is not holding space this evening and is, in fact, just Sparky. Darn. Well, hopefully it'll end in a... Rick Smith is still going. Okay, good, good, good. Thank you, labor man. Bob on here. Great. Thank you for the update. That's a little less stress in my existence. Labor man, and I appreciate you for alleviating same. Now, yes, indeed, HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. This here is Friday on the front porch, you know, our annual, no, weekly, sometimes even long-time knower of words. We get the wrong one there in the line. And yeah, anyway, it is our weekly weekend Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, which you can participate in at your leisure by sending a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, S-P-A-R-K-Y-D-U-N-C. If you've never participated in Friday on the Front Porch, it is a whale of a whopping good time. And, well, just jump right in and we will welcome you to the fold. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is also where you go if you want to help us keep this effort going. Thank you very kindly to all who have been doing so. It looked pretty grim last night until all of a sudden folks jumped up and met Gary from New York's challenge. And so we come into the evening in good stead and need to raise only the usual $150. Actually, it's probably closer to $140, but nonetheless, $150 would be nice to stay even. If we want to get out in front, well, more. But, you know, that's five at 30, 30 at 5, 10 at 15, 15 at 10, 2 at 75, 3 at 50, 6 at 25, and other things that involve decimal points and are generally incomprehensible to my tiny, tiny mathematical calculating brain. Right. Oh, hi. I'm Bob Kincaid. And so if you want to help us keep it all going, well, you run over to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com and you go to the tab Contribute, and you use the PayPal interface there, some of whose screens are really asking for information you don't need to provide. We're just sort of stuck with it because it's provided by PayPal. That field where you have to fill in the number of corns on your great uncle's left foot. No, you don't have to fill that. It's all about just get to the next screen. That's all it is. And if you prefer to use the U.S. Postal Service, which is just fine, well, checks and money orders made payable to The Horn can be mailed to The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V 25801. And having said all that, Hopefully that'll be the end of it and we'll meet the fundraising goal and I won't have to say anything else through the course of the program because it really does detract from the program and hopefully we'll just have a nice, lovely, flowing end of the week Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable Conversation. Where to go this evening? Well, this is something the Christians call Good Friday. I don't know why. I don't know what's particularly good about celebrating the Friday that Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi, got murdered by the state. But, you know, it's their religion, not mine. Leave it to them. Actually, I do know why, and it still doesn't make much sense. No. Okay, Sparky, you're confusing me. All better. That's the curse of the latency of the internet web tubes. But any, okay, so everything seems to be running well. But anyway, this is Good Friday. And this is the day that the followers of Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi, celebrate him getting tortured to death. I know. But I thought we might, because this actually ties in. There's a little bit of information here. We call this holiday Easter. Easter is a word that is in no wise related to Christianity in any way, shape, form, or fashion, except that, well, once again, they sort of co-opted it and took a perfectly good pagan holiday and ruined it. That's just me. This is following ancient pagan traditions. Little children will receive gifts of chocolate bunnies. Of course, there were no chocolate bunnies prior to 1492. So once again, although no one will, it might be nice if the Christians would thank the native community, and particularly the indigenous peoples of Meso and South America, Mesoamerica, Central America, South America, for contributing chocolate, to their celebration. Chocolate coming from the cacao tree, which did not exist in the old unbathed world and had to be carried away as a result of the plundering of the new one. Yeah. So at least we'll take note of that. But anyway, it was a pagan holiday. Got co-opted. There are some who have said, and I like this historical perspective stuff. You know me well enough by now to know that. It is hard not to look at the word Easter without seeing Ishtar or Astarte, who, of course, were Middle Eastern lunar-based fertility goddesses. Temple prostitution was one way that one did one's proper obeisance to Astarte, Ishtar. They ran a house of good repute, actually. And I'm sure there are all kinds of anthropological reasons for doing it, not just a matter of keeping the priests in coin. But I don't. Everything I've read says that Easter actually relates to a Germanic word, but we have to understand that, around 7,000 BCE, you know, a little bit before the fundies say that the earth was actually created, some early peoples came into Europe bearing the Indo-European language family, of which some of the, like Farsi, Persian, Urdu, Hindi, that kind of thing, are kissing cousins. So, I don't know, maybe there is a relationship, because Eostre was a fertility goddess of spring. I'll bet my Wiccan friends could probably explain this better than I can. Mm-hmm. But anyway, since this week has been so thoroughly consumed by right-wing evangelical fundamentalist attempts to co-opt the Constitution to support their bigotry and their prejudice, I thought it might be fitting to examine the account of the resurrection, which this celebrates. I mean, not so much the crucifixion, but the resurrection. You know, when Yeshua goes from being a simple Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi to being a zombie god, you know, he rises from the dead. That's the definition of a zombie, right? And it's the resurrection that gets celebrated on Sunday. And I thought it might be interesting in relation to the events in Talibandiana and Arkansas and North Carolina Stan to examine a little bit of the Book of Mark. It's the oldest of the Gospels. It was actually written down along about the time that things were rapidly falling apart in the Middle East because of a rebellion against the lawful authority of the Romans. And some of this is sort of documented. And I thought you might find Mark 13 kind of interesting. And of course, I always prefer the King James Version because I like my English Shakespearean and my saviors and avatars the same way. And as he went out of the temple, one of his disciples saith unto him, Master, see what manner... Now, in the original Aramaic, that would be, saith unto him, Rabbi, teacher, see what manner of stones and what buildings are here. And Jesus answering said unto him, Seest thou those great buildings? There shall not be left one stone upon another that shall not be thrown down. And as he sat upon the Mount of Olives over against the temple, Peter and James and John and Andrew asked him privately. No, it was not John, Paul, George, and Ringo. It was Peter, James, John, and Andrew asked him privately, Tell us. And okay, so why are the disciples going to him privately? I mean, he's got all 12 of those guys who won't get a job and just follow him around. Why did four of them sneak up to him? Because they're all the time doing that. They can't act in concert. They can't act in consensus. They're all currying favor. Over against the temple, the Mount of Olives, and Peter and James and John and Andrew, and Peter was really not real bright. You know, Peter, it comes from the word meaning rock, and I think that was another one of Jesus' inside jokes because Peter was a rockhead. You are the rockhead upon which I will build my church. Nice boy, but not too bright. Atne ute ite bray if you one what I eme, ed say the savior say. But Peter and James and John and Andrew walk over and say, Tell us, when shall these things be? Because, you know, they want to have the inside knowledge. They don't want the other eight guys to know if Yeshua is about to tell them. They're going to have the inside track on when the, you know, with the stones and not one sitting upon another. Because that sounds like pretty bad times. So maybe they'll be able to get out ahead, because it's like the old joke about the two guys who are out hunting and they stir up a bear, a mama grizzly, and she comes after him, and one guy stops and starts taking off his real heavy hunting boots, and the guy says, "Why are you taking off your boots? You can't outrun that bear even if you don't have your boots on." And the guy looks at him at his buddy and says, "I don't have to outrun that bear. All I got to do is outrun you." Well, Peter and James and John and Andrew were looking to outrun the other eight. Tell us, when shall these things be? And what shall be the sign when all these things shall be fulfilled? You know, the disciples really were a bunch of assholes. They really were. And Jesus answering them began to say, Take heed, lest any man deceive you. For many shall come in my name, saying, I am Christ. Which is kind of what lets you know that this was influenced by Greek, because Christ is not a... No. For many shall come in my name, saying, I am Messiah. That's the word that Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi would have used. And shall deceive many. Because, see, He's saying this at a time when there was a Messiah on every street corner. I'm him. No, I'm him. Hey, get off my corner. That kind of thing. And when ye shall hear of wars and rumors of wars, be ye not troubled, for such things must needs be. But the end shall not be yet. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be earthquakes in divers places, and there shall be famines and troubles. These are the beginnings of sorrows. Well, this is just a parlor trick. This is the same thing that a palm reader does, or a tea leaf reader, or a seance person, or... I'm thinking here of, you've got a loved one. Name begins with A. No? B? C? J? D? E? P? Oh, P! Okay. It's a parlor trick. So, that's happening. That has happened at the time the first gospel, Mark, gets written down for the first time. And all of a sudden, and Mark's not one of the disciples, okay? People make that mistake. But he's looking back and he goes, wait a minute, there's not one stone left. Hey, didn't I hear him say that? Wow, maybe he was right. Maybe he was the one. Boom. But, okay, so we've got that. We've established that the disciples were jerks. We've established that they would gladly have put the shiv to the other eight disciples if given half a chance. We've established that Jesus was perceptive enough to look around him at all the chaos and all the misery and all the revolutionary upheaval and say, you know, this is not going to end well. And the temple's going to get torn down. He was probably not the only one who said it. And for those of you who are into the study of ancient Hebrew literature, there's plenty of evidence inside the Gospels to suggest that Yeshua was actually taught by somebody who was taught by Hillel. Right. Okay, so anyway. Now we come to the crucifixion. They've done the crucifixion. It's Sunday morning. Actually, it's probably Saturday. Maudlin Thursday is an invention. It's all invented. Probably all started on a Wednesday, not a Friday, but it doesn't work well with the work week, and you know, people don't get the day off, or might get the day off, and we don't want them to, you know. But here's the fun part about Mark. It is the oldest gospel. It is likely the earliest hagiographic account, or comes from a source. It's called Q in the German biblical scholarship that is pretty much acknowledged to be the basis for all of this. Curious Germans. Gotta love them. So Mark is the oldest gospel, and it comes from the oldest source material, Q. Dodis of irony. Never quits working. Q. I wonder if that's why they named the Star Trek Next Generation character that. Never mind. So, here's the fun part about Mark. It contains the first account of the crucifixion and the, maybe it's a resurrection, maybe it's not. Because Mark has 16 chapters and it just ends. Now, they won't tell you this in the Sunday services, because in the sunrise services, because it doesn't work with the hustle. But here is the sum and substance of Mark chapter 16. And when the Sabbath was passed, Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of James and Salome, had brought sweet spices that they might come and anoint him. And very early in the morning of the first day of the week, Sunday, so it was Sunday, they came unto the sepulchre at the rising of the sun. And they said among themselves, who shall roll us away the stone from the door of the sepulchre? And because she loved a good joke, Salome said, why do we need to be rolled? We're not that big. No, that's not in there. It's just a good joke on bad grammar. And when they looked, they saw that the stone was rolled away, for it was very great. Again, no one's ever going to accuse Mark or whoever the author was of being a literary stylist. The if A, then B kind of, they saw the stone was rolled away, for it was very great. I guess that means that it was so big that you couldn't help but notice. Anyway, and entering into the sepulcher, they saw a young man sitting on the right side, clothed in a long white garment, oddly enough, the same kind of garments that you would use to wrap the body up with, but it doesn't say that. And they were affrighted. Because, see, their buddy, Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi, had just been executed by the state. And the guy sitting over on the right, you never know, he might be a Roman informant or a Sanhedrin informant, right? And they were affrighted. I'll then hear about angels. And he saith unto them, be not affrighted. Chill. Ye seek Jesus of Nazareth, which was crucified. He's risen. He's not here. Behold the place where they laid him. But go your way, tell his disciples and Peter, that he goeth before you into Galilee. There shall ye see him, as he said unto you. And they went out quickly, and fled from the sepulchre, for they trembled and were amazed, neither said they anything to any man, for they were afraid. Yeah, that whole be not affrighted thing didn't do much for them. So they meet this guy inside Jesus' tomb. He says, nah, he's gone. He's rose up. Now hit the bricks, sisters. There are, let's see, nine. There are 11 more verses after that. They were added at least 200 years later. Just made up. Right. All the business about nobody believing. This is a slur on the Gnostics, who had not believed and were hard of heart, because he believed them not, yada, yada, yada. And then, lo and behold, verse 15, you get, go ye unto all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. He that believeth and is baptized shall be saved, but he that believeth not shall be damned. Again, there is no credible argument that if Jesus said any of this, he said that at all. None. Zero. Zip. Zilch. Nada. That's kind of called the Great Commission. A lot of missionary work is based on that. And it is based on an overt, provable, demonstrable fraud. But I guess, lest I be taken as simply poo-pooing an event that is a really big deal for a whole lot of people on the planet, let me say that I am not. And let me do so by parallel. I heard a story on the news this morning, and then I read up on it later on. Went and read several different versions. See? Textual criticism? To glean as much as I could of the story so that I could understand as many facts as might possibly be contained therein. And it's the story of a guy who, 35 years old, had worked diligently restoring an antique sailboat. And we all know that I have a thing for sailboats. If I ever win the lottery, and this was a cautionary tale to me, if I ever do. 35-year-old guy, lives in South Carolina, Stan, has worked day in and day out at the marina on this 65-year-old, 35-foot sailing yacht, sanding the decks, varnishing, painting, the kind of, polishing up the bright work, getting it in ship shape. And he eventually got it to where he could get out and putter around in the intercoastal waterway and go up the rivers and stuff, and he loved to fish. And forage for natural, you know, wild foods, that kind of thing. And that's a wonderful place to be doing it in. The South Carolina Low Country is beautiful. If you've never seen it. But somehow or another, along about the third week of January, he took his boat out to go fishing, and by all accounts, wasn't getting any bites. Nothing was even nibbling. And so he decided, though he was an inexperienced sailor, to take her out into the Gulf Stream. That's when things got bad. And that's when things get a little sketchy, but the happy news is that after 66 days of being presumed lost at sea, a cargo ship, the Houston Explorer, a German vessel, spotted him, rescued him, and the Coast Guard came and got him. And he was apparently, apart from a busted shoulder, from when his boat capsized, he was okay. He had collected rainwater. All of his electronics were, of course, ruined. So he couldn't radio for help. Don't know why he didn't radio for help before the capsizing came. A lot of unanswered questions there. But again, this is by parallel to, there's always unanswered questions because the perfect journalist does not exist. But for 66 days, he survives adrift at sea and was found about 200 miles east of the North Carolina coast. Possibly he got in trouble off of the Outer Banks, and he wouldn't be the first vessel to have so done. But he captured rainwater when he could. And he figured out a way to lure fish to him and essentially lived on sushi for 66 days. Take that, Tim from L.A. You don't like sushi. You survive on it. Tastes pretty good, too. And then he was rescued and brought back in. Not too much the worse for wear. But asked how he kept from going stark raving mad, because that's one of those old stories about being lost at sea. Eventually the madness of the vastness overtakes you, and you start drinking seawater, and then you're done. Oh, that's true. Stockton Larry pointing out, but what about the radioactive fallout from the Charleston nuclear explosion? Maybe that's what capsized his boat. Yeah. But he said he kept from going mad by reading the Bible. Now, I guess it's an Easter miracle, because his boat capsizes three times, his mast gets broken off, his rudder is broken, absolutely adrift at sea, and somehow or another, a Bible made out of paper somehow manages to not get sopping wet to the point that it's unreadable. No, All Is Lost, the Robert Redford movie, is not about this experience, Lottie, question from the chat room, because All Is Lost is a movie that was released last year. This guy just got rescued yesterday. Which I thought about, too, and it, again, questions. Questions, as Rutger Hauer said in Blade Runner, questions. But he said he kept from going mad by reading the Bible, and that he had thought about a lot about the meaning of his life. Now, this guy seemed, before and after, pretty hale, pretty hearty, fairly intelligent. My first question, he spent all of his time, that's the way the articles were written, all of his time restoring this boat. And he's 35 years old. Job? Bueller? Anybody? No mention. Nothing about, well, he'll go back to his previous occupation of stockbroker with blah, 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 blah. No. First thing I thought, and I mentioned it to Agnes, if I ever am in some sort of a situation that allows me to fulfill my dream of owning my sailboat, one, I am going to study the art and science of sailing for all it's worth before I ever go out into the big deep scary. Onto, not into. We prefer to remain on, not in. You know, you never know when you're going to run into old Greg. Never mind. Drink Bailey's from a shoe. But please remind me, if that ever happens, to take anything with me by way of reading material. Anything. But leave the Bible home. Not that I'm going to take much reminding, mind you. But it struck me that, you know, for being lost 66 days at sea, really, wouldn't it have been a lot handier maybe to have had the Odyssey? Yeah, the Odyssey? Lost at sea? Odysseus? The wily captain from Ithaca? But the whole point there is that even in a story that only ended yesterday, there's all kinds of questions for which we have no answers. Sorry, Barbie. Barbie asking, did he have a soccer ball named Wilson? Another one of the questions we asked early on. No, there was no reference to Wilson. Wilson! No. But if we cannot fill in the blanks about and answer the questions about a story that ended yesterday, how many more gaps and holes must there be in a story that is 2,000 years old? And that's in the way of myth. Myth does not attempt to answer every question. It tries to make a point. And if you think about, and like I said, I'm not trying to make sport of this holiday celebrated by a couple of billion people on this planet. But if you think about the central events, assuming that they actually happened, if you think about the central events, they had to be terrified. No one knew who was next. No one knew how far the repression was going to go. No one knew who was going to have his name or her name dropped. Have the denarius dropped on them up at Pontius Pilate's office. And how terrifying it must have been to witness a public execution. The Romans by this time had become quite expert at crucifixion. I mean, when you can crucify 5,000 people all the way up the Appian Way to Rome, as Marcus Licinius Crassus did, when you can have 50 or 100 or so people crucified on your word alone, as Gaius Julius Caesar did, well, you're no slacker in the execution department. And so I would say that, and it's a pity more of Christianity doesn't do this, because I would think a lot better of it if it did. This holiday of theirs is a holiday for remembering acts of state-sponsored brutality. Isn't it interesting that Europe has largely gotten away from its oppressive, repressive Christian traditions, and yet they're the ones who have gotten rid of the death penalty? Meanwhile, America, declaring itself a Christian nation, now, in many instances, crucifies people horizontally, laid out with their arms splayed out so that we can get the needles with the poison into their arms. We kill people. And as in more cases than we care to admit, we kill innocent people who did not commit the crime of which they were accused and convicted. And we've even got a Supreme Court justice who says that the Constitution of the United States does not afford an essential human right to the citizens of this nation not to be unjustly murdered by the state. We're talking, of course, about that noble, noble, conservative Roman Catholic Opus Dei Christian, Fat Tony Scalia. Maybe we would do well to remember the agony, not just of Yeshua the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi, but the agony of his followers and friends and his mama and his daddy and his brother, maybe his sisters, aunts, uncles, cousins, followers, yeah, disciples. Maybe we would do well to meditate upon that instead of trying to figure out what it is that he spent his life hating. Which takes us, because I told you that there was a point to all of this, takes us to one other little passage from the Gospel of Mark. Mark chapter 11, verse 11. And Jesus entered into Jerusalem and into the temple, and when he had looked round about upon all things, just went and had a look-see, went walkabout, and now the eventide was come, he went out unto Bethany with the 12. We're assuming Bethany was a place and not a woman of whom he was fond. I was place. And on the morrow, when they were come from Bethany, he was hungry. Here we have the very, 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 very human Yeshua the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi. Verse 13, and seeing a fig tree afar off, having leaves, he came, if haply he might find anything thereon. And when he came to it, he found nothing but leaves, for the time of figs was not yet. The time of figs. Mm-hmm. So, just to kind of strip it away from its lovely Elizabethan language, Jesus woke up hungry, wanted some breakfast, and walking out along, say, hey, look, guys, a fig tree. And it's got leaves on it. You know, anybody who's ever had an apple tree or a peach tree in the yard knows that having leaves is not necessarily an indication that there's going to be fruit. The fruit usually gives itself away at a pretty great distance, but, well, take it as read. So Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi, and his buddies go walking up to, and I'm surprised there's not a verse in there about three of the apostles coming up, or three of the disciples coming up and saying, Lord, if there are figs, will you give us one first before you give those other nine? Will you, Jesus, please? But no, he found nothing but leaves, for the time of figs was not yet. Which is an interesting statement for Mark to make, insofar as this is the living God, the Son of God, knows all, sees all, tells little, who couldn't, even looking at a fig tree from far off, figure out that there weren't any figs on the tree. You know, for a living, breathing God, that's just not much in the way of God magic. For the time of figs was not yet. And yet God on earth didn't know it was not the time of figs. But Jesus gets pissed off. Jesus has a hissy. Jesus pouts. He gets mad at the fig tree. Really? At a tree, he gets mad. And Jesus answered, which is an interesting verb to be using because there's nothing in there about the fig tree saying anything to him. Maybe it's like Neil Diamond talking to chairs, and the chair, you know, no one, not even the chair. And Jesus answered and said unto it, he's talking to the fig tree, really. Wait a minute. There he is walking along out of Bethany and gets mad at a fig tree. Yeah. And he talks to the fig tree. And for all of those of you who thought that Clint Eastwood started out by talking to chairs, no.
I talk to the tree, but they don't listen to me. I talk to the stars, but they never hear me.
Yeah. Hard to resist, isn't it? I certainly couldn't. And Jesus answered it and said unto it, no man eat fruit of thee hereafter forever. Forever. And his disciples heard it. Oh, God, he's talking to the trees again. I bet this is probably not the right time to ask him if we get to sit at his right hand when he's gone in his kingdom. Go find Yeshua a piece of matzah. His blood sugar's dropping. And so there it is. Mark chapter 11, verse 12. Through 14. News Ninja Carol Baker's already on knows where I'm going. Sometimes great problems can be solved by simple solutions, simple, elegant solutions, like eyeglasses. All this time, all these fundamental evangelical fundamentalists have been running around, and it's occasioned legislation in Indiana and Arkansas and North Carolina stand, and the bills introduced elsewhere, West Virginia, Kentucky, Georgia, what have you. All these fundies running around hollering, God hates fags. When there it is, he hates figs. Long way to go for a punchline, but it was a trip I felt like we had to take. So, for what it's worth, happy Easter to everybody. And just remember, God hates figs. Several notes coming in over the course of the filibuster. Luta writing in, subject line, church. It's kind of true, Bob. On the reservation, you can go to any of the churches there, which are too many for my tastes, but I digress. The services are always mixed with Lakota traditions, or the people involved in the services are wearing some traditional dress, etc. I guess that's why the Episcopalians are big in Indian country. I guess 100 years of forced Christian boarding school did its job, eh? Yeah. thank you for the corn, the beans, the squash, the chocolate, the chilies, the avocados. No, not so much. Jack in Shreveport with a note. Could you elaborate on the statement you made that Jesus was executed by the state? Yet I hear often that Jesus was executed by the Jews. I think that Mel Gibson movie is an example of the latter. It's a point used to divide and conquer, I think. Oh, it's a divide and conquer my left hind foot, Jack. It's been an excuse for murder for 2,000 years. Oh, the Jews killed Christ! Well, had the Jews done anything of the sort in ancient Palestine, they would have incurred some seriously Roman wrath. And besides, the Jews were not in the crucifixion business. That was a Roman gig. And in fact, the Hill of the Skulls, or whatever it was, Golgotha, Calvary, where the crucifixions took place, that was not just a special place where they took Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi, to bump him off. That was where you got took when it was time for you to be killed. By the state. To be sure, if you want to know the history, you can go and read it. Reza Aslan does a brilliant job with it, with explaining the context of the whole Messiah movement of that time period in his book Zealot. I highly recommend it. But there was all kinds of consternation and foment and conflict, largely brought on by the fact that it was pretty well understood that the priestly class in Jerusalem was as corrupt as the day is long, which is nothing particular to people of the Jewish faith or the Jewish institutional structure. It kind of, you know, that's what happens when you have a priestly class anytime. It ingathers power to itself. And money. Yeah. And so that whole Jews killed Christ thing, though, was used to great effect by the Christian church by the time it gets institutionalized by Constantine and thereafter. And the next thing you know, you've got the Roman Catholic Church looking the other way while some bumpkins and yokels in Poland or elsewhere say, oh, the Jews are poisoning the wells, or the Jews steal little Christian babies to make their bread. And that's why matzah's got that red color to it. Christian baby blood. It's called the blood libel. And no, it wasn't just used to, like I said, it wasn't just used to divide and conquer, Jack. It was used as an excuse for wholesale murder. Jack also observed, maybe some climate change would have come in handy back in the day. Jesus was looking for figs. Maybe the figs would have come in early. Sorry, couldn't have helped him. I understand. That's true. At least he was talking to the fig tree, and talking to plants helps them. It provides a little blast of CO2 right in their face, if plants had faces. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought this whole thing was worthwhile, insofar as it's all intertwined with the religious hatred that is out there for the LGBTQQQ community and those of us who are that community's allies and friends, or those of us who just don't think it's any business how people love each other except the people we ourselves love. Right, yeah. But there is an abundance, and I do mean it, an abundance of hate that flows over this once great nation, this crumbling empire, let yea verily like unto a mighty river. Consider Jennifer LeClaire. And again, in many of these instances, we find out much more about how dirty the right-wing mind is than anything about the conduct of anybody anyway. No, the right-wing evangelical fundamentalists are simply obsessed with sex, and this is part and parcel of America's long and dirty history of being repressed, oppressed sexually via things like Calvinism and Puritanism. And, you know, Roman Catholicism, too. Plenty of guilt to go around. Well, right before airtime, I tweeted and Facebooked that the secret words for tonight are perversion tsunami. The password is perversion tsunami. Jennifer LeClaire fancies herself a prophetess. And see, that's another one of those things that I won't completely make sport of. I saw, for instance, a post by my good friend August on his Facebook page last night complaining about the fact that there are barcodes on the back of West Virginia driver's licenses now, and that he went down to the local Rippy Mart for a six-pack of beer and a pack of smokes, and being as how, well, August is not going to be, I mean, good friend, love the guy. But August is not going to be mistaken for a 21-year-old ever anywhere by anyone who isn't completely wiped out on psychedelic drugs or, you know, just plain gone. But nonetheless, the clerk down at the Rippy Mart asked to see his license, which he happily showed her, had his birthday, and the clerk said, "No, take it out of your wallet. I have to scan the barcode on the back," which, of course, contains every bit of the information, not just your birthday, but your address, your home address, your mailing address, your eye color, weight, height, organ donor status. Everything that's on the driver's license is contained in that barcode. And he drew a line in the sand there and said, "No, absolutely not, and I won't do business with you anymore." And I immediately thought, in this incredibly data-driven world in which we live, I thought about the maunderings of John of Patmos, who wrote the book of Revelation while in solitary exile on an island somewhere off the Ionian coast. You know how the guy was 66 days with nothing but a Bible, and we consider that he's lucky to have come back, an insane, blithering idiot? Well, John of Patmos didn't get so lucky. He became an insane, blithering idiot, and that's how you get Revelations. But, that having been said, the trick to prophecy, and it really has nothing to do with any gifts from God, the trick to prophecy is being able to look postulate things and extrapolate things out into the future and just kind of imagine how it's going to play. And so there's John of Patmos, who lives in a very conflicted time, who has been put on an island in exile, and it was not a nice island. And he's religiously insane in the first place, and he's run afoul of the authorities. And he has this vision of authoritarianism run amok. It's also accompanied by hallucinations, and he's heard the word coming out of Rome of how absolutely crazier than the sprayed roach, either Nero or Caligula or somebody. Caligula came before. It was Caligula, Claudius, Nero. Yeah. And begins envisioning things. And one of the things that he envisions is a time in which one will be able to neither buy nor sell absent the mark of the beast. And there's a lot of talk about the beast and a lot of spittle and, you know, madness. But that's how, that's, you know, that's how prophecy works. There's nothing special about it except for the fact that it takes a special mind to extrapolate present events and how they're going to play out into the future. And there, and so there we are in a highly technologized society with the mixture of a little bit of ignorance on the part of a clerk who says, no, I can't just take your birthday. I gotta scan the barcode. Management says I gotta scan the barcode. If I don't scan the barcode, management will fire me. And there you go. So it's not, but meanwhile, Jennifer LeClaire, sorry, I guess I'm going to ruin this for you, Michael. Michael in Madison just wrote, wait. I want to see if I can use this in a sentence before you explain it. Perversion tsunami. The flagrant genital parade had to be canceled on account of perversion tsunami. Am I close? You don't know how close you are, Michael. You really, hey, you might be a prophet. So Jennifer LeClaire, who is the news editor of a right-wing evangelical fundamentalist outfit magazine called Charisma, went to talk to Rick Wiles, who himself is crazier than a sprayed roach, about how she done had some prophetic visions. This won't take long, but you will want your handy dandy hockey puck and duct tape. And no, you're gonna go play the lottery after you hear this, Michael and Madison, because I think you're right on top of it. Okay, Jennifer LeClaire talking to Rick Wiles about her vision. See, there was a reason for this whole filibuster. I promise.
Jennifer, what did the Holy Spirit say to you 6 months ago?
I'm just going to read it to you. It'll take about a minute.
Go ahead.
He said, a tsunami of perversion and all manner of wicked sin is headed toward this nation. You've only seen yet the rumblings of what the enemy has planned. For many in your nation have called good evil and called evil good. Many in this nation have not believed you will reap what you sow. You have sown iniquity for decades, and you have taken the hand of perversion. You have walked in step with abominations rather than resisting the temptations to deny my word and my son. The perversion in this land will increase and increase and increase. There will come a day when morality is no longer merely relative, but is persecuted. There will come a day when evil is considered good and good is considered evil. When that day comes, those who are hidden in the shadow of my wings will be insulated from the abominations around them. I will raise up the likes of Abraham and Moses to deliver the righteous out of the hand of the wicked in that day. I will shield those who run into my name, but no longer look and no longer think that you will turn the tide by your prayers alone. These things must be so. I warn you now to fear not, but to ready your hearts. Buy your oil. Be ready for my coming.
That's powerful. It's sobering.
It's also kind of weird, too. Buy your oil, be ready for my coming. Shouldn't that be lay in a sock of tissue? Sorry. Therein, this hateful woman, Jennifer LeClaire, has declared that anybody who doesn't have sex the way she thinks people should have sex are immoral. And see, this is the, you know, this is that Gandhi moment. I like your Christ. I do not like your Christians. They are so unlike your Christ. See also, Jesus, save me from your followers. Imagine, if you can, you don't even have to imagine. I mean, we got it right there in front of us. The password is perversion tsunami. Amazing. God used a word like tsunami. Oh, well. But it's astonishing to behold the hubris, the arrogance of these right-wing evangelicals. who will turn their backs upon hungry people and will elect people who will cut the access to food security for their own fellow citizens, who will beat the drum for bloody-handed war, on that will surely result in the death of innocents. And who will then turn around at the same time, celebrate the execution of their avatar, and declare themselves to be in possession of the one true faith and the real morality.
And I believe it's accurate. I believe it's truly a word from the Lord. A tsunami of perversion and all manner of wicked sin is headed toward this nation. And we see it right now. The first wave has already come in. And the nation is embracing.
They're coming in waves. Thank you, Goddess.
Perversion. It is embracing hostility towards God.
Might it help if they would define the perversion? And don't try any of your pre-versions, because I'm watching. And you know what? If you're lying, you're going to have to answer to the Coca-Cola company.
It's the most bizarre thing I've ever witnessed in my life, and it, quite frankly, it's frightening.
Well, it is frightening, and I try not to meditate on these things. You know, working at Charisma with the news, obviously I'm seeing things and hearing things all day long. I'm seeing some of the worst.
I see things. I hear things.
Very frightening if you meditate on it. So I've tried to start, and I would advise our listeners, strike a balance.
Stop meditating, sister. Get a hobby.
Between being aware of what's going on so that you can pray and prepare, but don't meditate on the fearful comings. Meditate on the Word of God.
Yeah, those fearful comings, well, don't meditate on them. Never had one of those.
Mm-hmm. This very week in Indiana, the governor and the legislative leaders of Indiana are being treated as though they're worse than Hamas or Hezbollah.
And see, there's that point. In the United States, they are worse. Ted Cruz is worse. Mike Pence is worse. Tony, Norman, yes, Mother Bates, Perkins is worse. Brian Fisher is worse. Tim Wildman is worse. James Dobson is worse. All of these evangelical fundamentalists are worse than Hamas or Hezbollah. Why? Because Hamas and Hezbollah aren't here. Unfortunately, these assholes are. Just saying.
I mean, we have state governors, Connecticut, state of Washington, the governor of Washington, the mayor of Seattle, who are banning state and city employees from traveling to the state of Indiana because Indiana passed a law protecting religious freedom. Jennifer, I mean, I'm just amazed at what's happening in this country.
Yeah, it doesn't make any natural sense. Therefore, we must recognize that this is a spiritual attack. We've opened the door to the enemy in this land. We've opened.
What? This makes no sense. Therefore, we must You know, when you put therefore in a sentence, there's usually supposed to be some sort of linkage. Oh, merciful God. There's more. Oh, by the way, we are at 4 minutes past the hour. The first hour of the program has since gone by. A reminder, if you'd like to jump into Friday on the Front Porch, feel free to do so. Sparky is anxiously awaiting you in the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. Jump on by and participate in the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. We got more of this insanity, but I think instead we're going to take a little break. Our bumper music for this Good Friday, kindly provided by Michael in Madison, who says, I don't recall if I've ever convinced you to play this. It's probably a bad idea, but this is by far my favorite Good Friday carol. Well, we will, I will I will gladly avail myself of your suggestion, Michael. And I thank you very kindly for this wonderful Tiger Lily's tune. Mm-hmm. And we'll take a break. Remember, we try to raise $150 every evening, this evening being no different. We could have been in a much deeper hole, but we're not, thanks to everybody who responded last night. But we do need to raise $150 this evening, of which we have thus far raised zero. Hopefully folks will run by headonradionetwork.com and participate by in the ongoing upkeep of this here little operation by utilizing the PayPal interface at headonradionetwork.com. Please? Thank you. So let's fire up the Horn Malloy Skype chat group for Friday on the Front Porch. This is Conversation Radio, Week's End, Good Friday edition, the third day of April, 2015. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Upon his head? Well, that was my idea. I think I might be going to hell. Oh dear! I'm bang, 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 banging in the nails. Bang, 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 banging in the nails. Bang, 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 banging in the nails. Bang, 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 banging in the nails. I'm bang, 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 bang.
The Tiger Lilies, Banging in the Nails, 13 Jesuses, courtesy of Michael in Madison. Great suggestion. Thank you, Michael. Remember, the password is Perversion Tsunami. With regard to Perversion Tsunami, Michael in Madison pointing out, Surf's up, Jesus! All I can picture is Jesus in Bermuda shorts on a crucifix-shaped surfboard riding a gnarly wave of God's fearful comings. It's a perversion tsunami, Mom! Yeah. So, it is Friday on the Front Porch and time to fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Let's start in Colorado, where I presume Kevin has brought along Bill. Am I correct?
Yep. Yep.
Good evening to both of you.
Good evening.
And I guess, Happy Easter.
Happy Easter. Well, I was just bitching about being in Parma when I was in the Catholic Children's Joint, spending 3 hours on Good Friday in church. Never mind.
Understood. Okay, and let's check in. Let's check in with the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. Good evening, Sparky.
Good evening, Bob. And I don't bang nails. I do a lot of screwing.
Ah.
Oh.
And I don't do Easter. So no happy Easter here.
Well, you know, that's you've saved yourself a lot of spiritual anguish by just letting it be another Sunday.
I'll go out and sit underneath the redwood. How's that?
It works for me.
Yep.
But I was doing a lot of screwing earlier this week with a screw gun, mounting all that stuff to that board that you saw the picture of.
Yeah.
I'm glad I got that done.
How long did that take you? That was a heck of a job.
Oh, two 4-hour days.
Would you build a cross for your neighbor?
No, I did an electrical service change in the man cave.
Ooh, yeah, that's a big job. Yeah, my hair is standing out in by now, and look at Bill. You can see right through him, you know.
No, and the only thing I lost is I broke my little drill again. My stepson had broke it and glued it back together, and then it fell off the ladder and
oops.
Broke in half again.
Well, better it falling off the ladder than you.
Well, I have a real good ladder, and I don't fall off of them. I've been standing on them for 40 years, so I don't... I know... If you got to go too high, like you tell my apprentice, if you're on that step where it says no step beyond this point, get a bigger ladder.
Yeah, don't get
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, take them seriously.
It was one of the best things I got at a garage sale. I got a 3-section wooden ladder, and man, that was a nice ladder for the price I paid for it at a garage sale, you know? Once in a while, you can find something in those places.
Well, I've got all fiberglass ladders. I got a 6 and a 10. They hold up really well.
And fiberglass are your best bet, yeah.
Yeah, well, when you're an electrician, you use fiberglass ladders, too.
You got it. I told you, a buddy of mine got nailed working up in the bucket truck, and man, when they brought him back down, he was unconscious. Of course, you weren't doing that. You were doing residential, weren't you?
No. What? I was doing anything behind the meter. I mean, journeyman inside wireman. I wire houses, office building, commercial building, water treatment plants, hospitals, power plants. I did a little bit of everything.
I still wonder how I jumped the meter and didn't kill myself and had half of my electricity for free. Which I love that part of it. You know, it's fucking the illuminating company. Oh, pardon my French here.
Or your Anglo-Saxonism, as the case may be.
It's called slugging the meter.
Or it might be Middle English.
Well, I had to fix it back up before I moved so that they couldn't, pin me for that shit. They couldn't come back on me for it. And I didn't want to hurt somebody else, so it wasn't that hard to do because one of you guys, he was an electrician, and he showed me how to do it and how to take it off. So, mm-hmm. And I like the free electricity. Gee, son of a bitch, Bergie, what can I tell you?
Yeah, well, that's why I changed out the electrical stuff in there. I want to get some cheap electricity here that comes from the sun pretty soon.
Yeah, the good stuff.
Well, you guys are going to have problems. What's the water situation going to do to you?
Well, I'm on a well.
Okay.
So if it goes dry, I have to get a well driller out to dig a deeper well.
One of my uncles had a well, and man, when you go out there to visit, a little kid going out there to visit, my aunt would come in and give me a bath, and she put about 2 inches of water in the tub, you know. because they were working off a well and they wanted to keep that well.
There's been rumors going around that they want to put meters on our well.
Oh, for Christ's sake.
Well, what's most distressing about the water restrictions in California is that, okay, so you can't water your lawn, you can't wash your car, or whatever that whatever's coming with it, but none of it touches big agriculture. They can go on as if everything was such a, you know, status quo ante. Do I have that right?
They're not getting their water from a water treatment plant. Most of the, like when I took Ferg to the airport,
yeah,
I was pointing out where they're putting in the solar panels now to run their pumps. You saw several of them going down the highway for the new orchards that I saw. So that, and that's what they're doing around here. I was talking to the ranchers. There's a ranch down in Gerber that went totally solar. And then took power newer pumps because they drilled deeper wells, and they're figuring out ways to do it. I mean, they're nowadays. I mean, they used to have a guy that had to go through the orchard, put out the old aluminum irrigation pipe with the ring birds on them, but nowadays they got little drip systems, and then they. Down between the trees, I mean, nothing grows. I mean, they just have a drip system on the tree itself. So they're not wasting a whole bunch of water, I mean, on the ground around the tree. They're trying to get it right into the tree base.
Hey, Bob, you're not picking up any noise off of my end, are you?
There's a little click. But I don't know. It's not particular.
I know what it is. I'm going to reach over and turn off the fan that I have that somebody knocked over. And when the fan goes around, it clicks now.
Uh-huh.
I'm trying to get another fan. And it goes. I'll live without it. It's getting cooler. It's hot out here today.
Yeah, I've heard some. It was like 83 degrees in Minneapolis yesterday. So now
the whole fucking thing's crazy, Spark, you know? It's just crazy what's going on.
Oh, and by the way, just a quick thank you to Mo Liberal, who just took a bite out of tonight's fundraising. We're now down to $125 to go. Mo Liberal was the first in. Thank you very, very kindly. Just like to keep track of these things so that... and extend thanks when they occur. There are a couple of, you know, there are other things out there worth discussing this evening. But historically, granted, we're a couple of weeks away. But Easter, you know, I don't just think about Easter stuff. I also think about things that have happened this time of year. And this year is the 99th anniversary of the Irish Easter Rising.
Oh, yeah,
1915. You're
right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So it's the 99th anniversary on, what, April the 24th? When the opening salvos of what would eventually result in Irish independence were fired. And, of course, the horrible bloodletting of most of the 20th century that simply referred to...
And was that also called the Potato Rebellion or something?
No.
That was different.
Yeah, this is the Easter Rising, 1916. But
April 9th wasn't a good day for you guys, not for you, but the Southerners.
Well, it depends on how you look at that.
You know what I'm saying. It wasn't a good day for Bobby Lee. Let's put it that way.
Well, yeah, and you know something else, Bill, and I think your historical perspective. Will come into play here. I mentioned briefly last night during the program that Governor Sam Brownback of Kansas signed into law an absolutely insane bill coming out of the Kansas legislature that means that now in Kansas, almost the entire population over 18, 21 maybe, is now empowered to carry a concealed weapon anytime, anywhere, without so much as a training class, without so much as a permit being issued, a test being, nothing.
And you've got Florida, who has passed a bill allowing people to carry a concealed weapon on college campuses.
But Kevin, it was Kansas that struck me particularly because, of course, Kansas's history is wrapped up in the concept of what was called bleeding Kansas.
Yep.
And if the marvelously coherent Diane from Kansas, Stan, is listening tonight, she's nodding her head saying, yep. Because, well, hey, bleeding Kansas happened in part because anybody could carry a gun anywhere they wanted to. So a lot of people who were in favor of white people being able to own darker-skinned people decided to carry guns from Missouri over into Kansas and start shooting up people who were trying to establish Kansas as a non-slave state. Yet another instance of the South shooting first. And of course, that whole thing leads to John Brown.
I'll give you one more. April 9th. April 9th was the day that the American Army had to surrender the Bataan Peninsula to the Japanese. Because when the general was going to see the Japanese, in his memoirs, he said he knew how we felt that day. Because he had to go talk to the Japanese. That corridor held out longer, but Bataan went on April 9th. 42. Not a good day for Americans under arms, you know.
And then of course.
What is a good day?
Then of course there are the immortal words of T.S. Eliot. April is the cruelest month, breeding lilacs out of the dead land, mixing memory and desire, stirring dull roots with spring rain. Winter kept us warm, covering earth in forgetful snow. Feeding a little life with dried tubers. Summer surprised us coming over the Starnberger Zee with a shower of rain. We stopped in the colonnade and went on in sunlight into the Hofgarten and drank coffee and talked for an hour. Bin gar keine Russen, stamm aus Litauen, ich Deutsch. And when we were children staying at the Archduke's, my cousin, he took me out on a sled and I was frightened. He said, Marie, hold on tight. And down we went in the mountains. There you feel free. I read much of the night and go south in the winter. And that's the beginning, the segment referred to as the Burial of the Dead, from T.S. Eliot's The Wasteland. April is the cruelest month.
Sparky, where's the rest of the house tonight?
Oh, we got it. Wait, that's more folks here. Carol Abel is with us. Good evening, Carol, in Australia.
Good morning, Bob. How are you?
I'm well. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, and good night, depending on wherever everybody is. Doing pretty good. End of the week. Not a great Friday, but an okay Friday. We've had a rainstorm going through, and I've been a little bit nervous about whether or not we'd get the entire program in because the rickety old coal-fired power grid run by Appalachian Power has a habit of just falling apart. It was funny. The power blinked two or three times yesterday, and we stayed okay here, but 2.5 miles up the road where I go for my gas station pizza, they were out of power from 2:30 in the afternoon till 10 o'clock at night. And so was the grocery store.
We've had some power outages here, but at least I can trace them back to an actual event. And when it goes down here, everybody loses it.
Well,
it's very, very egalitarian.
Well, the funny thing about a power outage here is people get pissed off, but we expect it. We expect Appalachian Power to be hopelessly incompetent in the management of their coal-fired, antiquated, rickety, fallen-down, toxic, early 20th century power grid. Right, Gerald?
Thanks, Obama.
There we go.
Well, you just need some big-ass nukes down there. That's what everybody needs more of, you know?
Well, everybody but Iran.
Oh, yeah, of course, everybody but Iran.
Because they're crazy.
by the way, Bob.
Well, you get enough radiation going around and everybody goes crazy. Apparently it has very deleterious effects on the brain.
Well, I'll be dipped. Who would have thought?
Maybe that accounts for some of the weirdness we see.
When the power goes down here, it gets fixed fairly fast because we got a smart grid.
Yeah, we don't have a dumb grid here, Sparky. We have an idiot grid.
Well, here the light company has to have the football field and the Browns lose on. They have to have it named after them. So, well, I wouldn't go there if you paid me anymore. I saw those guys playing in 56, 7, and 8. It cost 60 cents a ticket. World.
60 cents wouldn't get you up to the booth to buy a ticket these days.
Yeah, 60 cents was a student ticket. I was a student of watching the NFL get powerful and more powerful and more powerful until they're bigger than God, you know. Then again, that's not difficult to be.
Well,
and
remember, they're a non-profit deal.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. I don't think...
So is Westboro Baptist Church, but... You know.
Did the NFL say anything about this stuff in Indiana?
I haven't heard anything yet. It's possible they will. They have to. When you look at them, I don't know. If it said something, if it was white versus black, the NFL would have been all over it by now because, you know, you have a lot of great black players.
They got gay players, too. It doesn't seem to make a difference.
Absolutely. The problem is that, we need to know more. We need to know how many. We need to know that people can say what they are, and it's not the end of their world, you know? That's what we need.
And let us say good evening to Haley in Arkansas. Sorry, for some reason or other, I couldn't get you on air last night, Haley.
Well, I didn't catch the entire show live since I was still at work when the beginning of it. And it's been a very busy week, to say the least, here. A lot of events happening from about Friday, especially from the middle of last week until yesterday. And, okay, in a nutshell, what happened was there was an alternate, after all the pressure was put on, partly because of the Indiana situation, the governor blinked and decided he had planned on signing 1228, which was the original bill, a RFRA bill, which legal scholar, expert on NPR said was worse than Indiana's. He decided, well, y'all need to rework this. So another bill was reworked as a shell bill, and it's not quite as bad, but it's still not very good. And it was approved, and the governor signed it, and the original bill was withdrawn. And it's not a victory, but it could have been much, much, much worse. But there are no legal protections for gender identity, orientation, so forth in the bill, unlike the changes made to the bill in Indiana.
Well, is everybody pretty happy with the situation? I mean, are the I've seen differing opinions, Haley. Is the fix really a fix?
I would not say so much as a fix, but it would be a temporary fix, but there really needs to be some more changes, and there is talk of maybe there has been pressure put upon the governor to issue an executive order. There's also been a lot of backlash from the religious right against the governor. And on Thursday, there was, I know it's Wednesday night into Thursday. I wasn't at the events on Wednesday because I had some things I had to take care of here. And then yesterday I was at work. But I was there on Tuesday. I was there for an early event on Monday before work. And I was also at a meeting late Sunday afternoon in Little Rock, which a local restaurant hosted, and 700 people showed up with maybe a day's notice. And some of us that got there a little late had to watch outside on the patio. They brought a big screen TV, and then some of the other people left, and I was able to go inside. And there was a rally involving, you know, and then there was several rallies at the state capitol. And on Tuesday, I was there with a sizable contingent of other allies and LGBT people. And for the two events, between the two events, sat in on the legislative session at the House session, and that was when the vote was taken on 1228, where it passed the full House, and there was a nasty little hissy thrown by, of all people, Justin Harris. Remember Justin Harris?
Oh, representing Harris, yes.
Oh, he threw a...
And Marsha.
He threw a little tantrum at Representative Eddie Armstrong because Eddie Armstrong called the bullshit out for what it was. And he started hollering. Well, actually, another representative started with a point of order. And then a few seconds later, after Representative Armstrong, who was opposed to 1228, continued speaking, Representative Harris hollered, "Point of order, point of order." And then he said, "I don't appreciate the way my colleagues have been attacked here." And I knew that voice sounded familiar, and I couldn't, and I had to lean over and from the gallery to see, and there he was. And I thought, and I was biting my tongue so much because I really wanted to holler something, but I would have probably been thrown out or arrested. There was a lot of security that day at the Capitol. And then on yesterday, things got really interesting because the pro 1228 people had a little rally, and there was also the opponents were also there.
You still there, Bill?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Bob, you still there?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, Haley just dropped.
I'm still here. Oh.
Well, I was. It sounded almost like you had gotten cut off in mid-thought, but if you didn't, that's fine.
Okay. But anyhow, It's a watered down version of the original bill, but it's to me it's still unnecessary, and just another avenue for the state to have to pay out money in lawsuits.
Well, you wonder what their next illegal action is going to be. How are they going to take action in these states? to take up their chosen views. And this is the tip of the iceberg with me. These boys don't know when they'll keep going until somebody really clobbers them. That's what they did the last time around. I mean, the last time in the 1860s. They'll keep pushing on somebody else's right to do anything. Because it's none of my business who's doing what with who unless it's murdering or stealing or those kind of old-fashioned values. Because these other values, they're their values. They're not mine. I don't, you know.
But the Fundies feel persecuted.
The best thing about this whole situation is first time in a long time, I've seen people really questioning what the right wing is doing and pushing back against it. Even other right wingers are now pushing back against what they're doing in Indiana.
Well, it's interesting. I just ran across an article at the Atlantic by Connor Friedersdorf talking about how pathetic and mean and ugly it was that people wrote mean things about Memories Pizza on Yelp and about how they felt all terrified and closed and he makes a passing fair point, Connor Friedersdorf does, insofar as he says, listen, if you drill down into this far enough, he pointed out, if you're in Southern California and you go to a mom-and-pop establishment of any variety of ethnicities or cultures, and you ask them the same question as was asked of these Talibandiana pizza makers, he said you're going to get the same answer, because marriage equality is not universally accepted at this time. And he tries to shame people who have spoken poorly of the Walkers and their crummy pizza, and their crummy pizza business. But the fact of the matter is, the reporter who walked in there, who has now gotten death threats, by the way, the reporter who walked into Memories Pizza asked the woman straight up, hey Steve, we're echoing, buddy. All the reporter asked was, what do you think of the religious liberty law? And that's when the proprietor of Memories Pizza unloaded his freedom protector into his own foot and said, well, I ain't got no problem with the gay people. I reckon we couldn't take none of our shitty little pizzas to cater a gay wedding. Yeah, okay. But the thing that Connor Friedersdorf left off of his Memories Pizza piece is the, and this is a real ha-ha, the 600,000, it was 100,000 last night. It has since climbed to over $500,000 in crowdfunded money that conservative, God-fearing, evangelical, fundamentalist, Bible-believing, upstanding, God-fearing Christianists have now given this little bitty pizza joint in Indiana who announced that they would proudly discriminate against a gay couple. Which tells me that this isn't nearly as much about discrimination against the family as it is, it's Chick-fil-A Part 2. Hey, look, we're going to put ourselves out there as the public face of Christian bigotry. Now watch us make a fortune out of it.
Yes, sir. That
whole thing just stunk to heaven, because it just reminded me in a way that these people, how they operate. It's almost like professional wrestling. It's to get everybody stirred up, the fans stirred up, so they'll go buy the tickets to the pay per view or the house show, and it's all contrived.
They are good drifters.
First off, go ahead.
Yeah, well, they are. And in point of fact, well, this is the time when we note that while Memories Pizza has raised $600,000 in 4 days, we're trying to raise $125 in the next hour and 40 minutes. Or, I mean, hour and 20 minutes. Hour and 20 minutes. So, I'm sure Mo Liberal would love to have a little bit of company in taking the fundraising goal down all the way to zero from the 125 that he took it down for, down to. So, just saying.
Just but, go on the internet and post a tweet saying how you're persecuted because you're believing, you know, and you too can be the proud owner of $600,000 in donations.
Maybe that's what I need to do. I need to tweet, I, by God, refuse to not perform a gay wedding.
Yep.
And see if we can.
Speaking of pizza, I do have a good pizza story to share.
Okay.
And it doesn't involve martyrdom and right wingery, and involves just some good quality pizza at a little hole in the wall bar and grill in Hot Springs, Arkansas. I had. It was actually a week ago tonight. I was with a group of little group I socialized with, and we got together and we hung out and we had some pizza, and I met one of the people who works there, and it's the pizza dough is homemade. It's not come off the truck somewhere, frozen, and that was some of the best pizza, bar none, I have ever eaten. I mean, it would just be hard to describe it in just so many words. I've ate some pretty good pizza, but I was just blown away with that pizza. And what made it better was I had a decent, craft beer to go with that.
I bet you don't get no pizza in that pizza parlor in Indiana.
Hey, here's an update on Memories Pizza on their GoFundMe site. Where the blaze is. $841,088 raised by 29,112 people in 2 days.
Howdy.
Oh, it's sponsored by the Blaze.
Oh, yeah, they're the ones that put the GoFundMe up. One of their guys did.
Oh.
Howdy, Gerald.
What kind of cut are they going to get out of it?
Well, you know.
Well, they're getting free publicity. Now, the outfit that's running, you know, GoFundMe will get somewhere between, I think, 3 and 5% of the take, maybe as much as 10.
Well, we're looking at over $1 million here before the weekend, I guarantee you.
No. And, of course, and of course, the Blaze is also carried on Dish Network satellite TV.
Oh, you know something I said, and this is just an aside, Haley, and everybody else for that matter. But we know that the Blaze is the Beckerheads' bizarre little broadcast enterprise. Well, little it is not. I mean, it's a multi-million-dollar operation. But the program, and I'll be honest, I haven't spent any real time watching it. I just happened to run across something. But the program that replaced Stephen Colbert when he left Comedy Central, I noticed, had a panel discussion one evening. I watched a clip because Lewis Black was on it, and it's the clip where he says that even LSD didn't prepare him for, oh, what was it? Which crazy right-wing thing was it? It was all over Facebook a week or so ago. Whatever it was. One of the panelists, and this says something about Comedy Central now, I think, and maybe it explains part of why Jon Stewart decided to hit the bricks, but one of the panelists was some woman from The Blaze, invited to participate in a panel on Comedy Central. That's like inviting a gravedigger to a birthday party. Oh, but is anybody, I can't remember her name, but...
Was Larry Wilmore?
Yeah, that program.
Yeah, he's trying to do a kind of a round table discussion group, kind of like Marr has. You know, he has...
But the Blaze, Sparky? A person from the Blaze? I mean, why not invite Alex Jones on?
He has some fundies on there. I mean, I've watched it a couple times, and I watched that one with Lewis Black, but I couldn't remember what they were talking about.
Dunk?
Yeah.
Dunk, just wanted to ask a question. Hi, everyone. I want to ask Haley and Gerald and whoever's talking about this, you were talking about this whole political circus, as far as I understand it, being contrived in order to make money, which leads me to, and you were also comparing it to either, I mean, you mentioned professional wrestling. I could probably also probably compare it to a televangelist sort of thing. But are these people serious about what they're doing, or are they doing it to make money and they're just shucking everybody else?
Well, isn't it obvious? I mean...
Well, I haven't been following the story all that much, Gerald. I don't...
Oh, okay. Well, if you've been following it at all, it's fairly evident what's going on here.
Because what I understand what Asia Hutchinson did is he came out with a really strong anti-gay, lesbian, transgendered position, you know, for religious freedom and not serving... gays, lesbians, transgendered, and bisexual people in establishments, and then later on, when he saw he was getting political heat, then he decided to modify his bill a little bit.
Well, I mean, that understates it a little bit.
And they walked it back.
He got the call from his owners at Bentonville, Arkansas.
Okay.
Asa Hutchinson is not a free man. He is an owned human being, owned by the Walton heirs, and when they picked up the phone and said, don't do this, his answer was, they said, Froggy, and he said, how high and how green.
Yep.
I understand. Jump and how high. I understand. Okay.
Well, another thing you have to realize, too, I think, this is my opinion, I think, let me put that qualifier in there, what happened in Indiana, it's almost... for certain that they thought that they would slip this through and it would go unnoticed and, you know, all would be great in the world of fundamentalism. But it's been caught, and now it's just a persecution of the right and
Gerald, how stupid are they if they thought that the LGBTQQQ community wouldn't notice this? When they had their fundies running around saying, this is going to protect our God-fearing, Bible-believing, upstanding Christian, evangelical, fundamentalist florists and bakers from having to cater any of them ungodly, homo, perversion, tsunami weddings. I mean, they were saying it.
Yeah, but Bob, it's about religious freedom, not about discrimination, right? I mean, that's what we're being told.
And you might believe that if you're you know, 9/10 of the way through a bottle of old Panther piss, but the rest of us didn't. I mean, I'm not bitching at you. You understand?
I understand.
But they had to. They were. This was an attempt to flex muscle. This was a test. This was a who has more clout test. And the right wing thought that because they had more clout in Indiana, that they could get away with it. Because they've been told by these multi-state legislation drafting organizations that, well, you've got the majority. You just ram it through and tell them to stuff it. But all of a sudden when corporate America says, well, no, we're still in the business. We like to sell things to gay people too. That it went, and the air came out of their balloon. And now they've had to climb back up on their cross.
Oh, I see what you did there. Technically,
I got to work with the metaphor. I got to work with the calendrical metaphors I'm handed. What do you want?
Very, very good.
Thank you.
Slow clap on that. Technically, they did get away with it. I mean, it is a law now. correct?
It most assuredly is, and that's why I was asking about the fix when I was talking to Haley. I don't think the fix is a fix, because if it was a fix, the law would be rendered a nullity.
That's right. That's generally, that was something I was going to say when Haley was talking about that. Usually these temporary fixes are not temporary. They become permanent. At least in most of the government I know about.
Well, until somebody fights it to the Supreme Court. See, that's the whole idea there.
Well, gee, I wonder how it's going to go there. He says
sarcastically. Right now, the way the Supreme Court is, who knows? But I think if they went to the Supreme Court with that, they'd outlaw it. They'd knock that law down.
Well, I disagree, Bill.
I think it'd go. I think they'd go with it.
I think that business will tell the boys in the Supreme Court, this crap's going to cost us money, so let's, you know. Of course, it's an election coming up, and they're liable to do anything, Bob. You're right.
Well, it would be after the election before they would hear it anyway.
Well, so. I think there are what? Yes. There are four or five guaranteed Opus Dei votes in favor of it.
Oh, yeah, so
Fat Tony Scalia, Sammy Bad Breath Alito, Clarence Coke Can Thomas, Anthony Weathervane Kennedy, and John the 3,000 Yard Stare Roberts. You gotta give them mob names because, you know, they're a mob.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
So Gerald and Haley, am I to understand when you mentioned contrived, are these right-wing fundies, are they contriving some kind of we're being persecuted, when they know very well that they're not being persecuted and they're just using it to raise money for themselves? Is that what I'm hearing when you were talking about?
That is what you're hearing, Larry.
Okay.
Pretty much, yeah. That's,
I know,
that's...
I'm sorry to sound like, you know, to sound like I'm adult, but sometimes, you know, sometimes I'm a little slow. Okay, thank you.
Well, I mean, it's all over the web and in the news, Larry. It's pretty evident what's going on. Just a couple news stories, and you pretty well have the whole picture. I mean, it reading between the lines is not hard to do.
Okay.
And well, at least in this instance is what I'm saying.
Well, I'm getting tired of the political circus. Anyway, when I was listening,
aren't we all, brother? Aren't we all?
Yeah, I'm really really tired. I mean, if you want to do theater, that's fine. But when they start doing theater with public policy, you know, it's like
it's a distraction circus.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
They don't want to govern, so they do this shit.
No, they want, it's not that they don't want to govern, Sparky. They actively want to dismantle the whole idea of popular governance. They are opposed to our constitutional form of governance, and they aim to dismantle it. That's why Dr. Bill has worked so hard to try to educate people. And by the way, for anybody else who wants to write to me about it and let me know, I appreciate the fact that, a couple of folks have let me know that there's a problem with Dr. Bill's archive. Ben is working on it. But if you want an invite to the Dropbox so you can go and get Dr. Bill's other programs that haven't gone up since January 26th, let me know and I'll add you to the Dropbox invite list. Yes, Mark.
Jack has an article he wants to share when you have time.
Okay, cool. What were you saying, Bob? You were in the middle of something.
Well, I'll finish up and then go to Jack. The point that, I mean, Dr. Bill has been working really, really hard to try to educate people about the incredible danger posed by this right-wing march toward a state-called constitutional convention. And I'm with him on it. I don't think it's overreaction. I don't think it is unlikely. I don't think that, because the minute that you say the right wing can't or won't do something, well, you can take whatever money you care to bet and run to Vegas and bet that they will. And the right wing has a hard on right now, and that's the only, I mean, it's just a straightforward street way to say it. The right wing has a hard on right now to dismantle the Constitution of the United States. And what we're seeing play out in places like Arkansas and Talibandiana, North Carolina stand, Georgia stand, etc. What we're seeing play out there is going to only fuel the fire of the right wing to go into a constitutional convention and say in the Constitution that marriage equality, that men marrying men or women marrying men, women, shall not be legal in this country. And here's the fun part, and it's kind of nuanced, but it's not really. Most people don't understand, because the right wing is, for instance, saying, well, we just want to go in long enough to have a constitutional convention so that we can pass a balanced budget provision, okay? Okay, great. Well, it's bullshit. The original framers of the Constitution, Madison et al., said they just wanted to go in and have a little constitutional convention just to tweak the Articles of Confederation a little bit. And the next thing you knew, the Articles of Confederation were fucking dead, all right? And we got a constitution out of it. Because the minute that that thing is gaveled to order, whatever they've told you going into it was going to be their sole purpose, all bets are off. Because the entire Constitution, every amendment, every case that's ever been decided by the Supreme Court interpreting it is on the table.
Yep.
Okay.
They couldn't do it with NCR rifles and gray uniforms, could they, Bob?
No.
Now they can do it now.
No, they've smartened up. They've smartened up. And the sad thing is that there are some alleged progressives out there who say, you know what? I think it would be absolutely marvelous if we could have a constitutional convention because, you know, then we could sit down and have a reasoned discussion with the right wing and end the corporate dominance of America, and we could pass a constitutional provision that would state clearly that corporations are not people. Wouldn't that be a lovely idea?
These people have no street smarts about them, Bob. Sorry. You're right.
Yeah, dumber. No, it's a dumb. I mean, it's like it's and I don't want to offend anybody who is just madly in love with Ralph Nader, but Ralph Nader wrote this article a couple of months back saying, "Hey, everybody, I got this neat, keen, groovy, hip idea. Why don't all the progressives back Rand Paul for president? Because progressives and right wing libertarians, we can really come together and agree on ending corporate dominance if we just make Rand Paul the president."
Well,
you know,
I thought I was...
Senile is only or what?
No, I just think the
I
check... No, he's not going senile in his old age. The check cleared, Bill.
Oh, yeah. He's running out of money from the way he made selling books. And, yeah, possible, yeah. I mean, I can't argue with Nader, although some of the finest young women I knew were driving Corvettes, man. Oh, good-looking women like those cars.
Yeah.
But they were,
so what
you know,
you're saying is he's
I have one more. I have one more story from Tuesday in April. I'd like to share. And if the rally had concluded and everybody was milling around and, you know, talking, speaking, and it was about two or three canvassers that were out, and somebody told me there was some libertarians trying to hustle signatures, and sure enough, one of them came over to us and asking, "Would you like to sign a petition to get an alternate political party on the ballot in Arkansas?" And then I knew right what was going on, and they were and a couple other people was next to me and started asking questions and things, and he kept on. He talked about the libertarians, and I turn around and ask him, "Do you support Ron Paul?" And he turned around very quickly said, "No, I do not. He's not a he's not a libertarian. He's a Republican."
Huh?
Oh.
Well,
dear.
You know, Bob and Duncan, when I ask a question, please. There are people other than
Larry. Could you hold up for a minute? Jack wanted to put in a.
Oh, sorry. Sorry. You got that article ready, Jack?
Well, actually, I have two, and I was it was back when the religious freedom thing was being talked about. That one is from my Thursday's paper front page. A guy, a state rep from Boulder Parish, which is a county right next to me. He wants to bring one up, okay, and it says he's mulling over a potential bill that would protect people from government actions against individuals or businesses with religious convictions. So, you know, just by putting businesses in there. But he says it's got nothing to do with an Indiana law. it has no application at all to whether somebody who owns a restaurant doesn't want to serve a sandwich to some patron for whatever reason. Now, just a little history on this. It's already legal in Louisiana, except in Shreveport and New Orleans, for a business owner to deny service to same-sex couples based on the company's religious beliefs. And then there's the other arguments against it. It's just one more thing, but it's like right here, why does this guy have to, do something. Now, if I may, on the second article from my Wednesday's paper front page, call for pre-test prayers draws fire. Caddo Parish Schools is investigating allegations in an open letter with the ACLU that the principal of this elementary school violated the First Amendment by invoking God and Jesus in calling for prayer in school publications. Now, I'll try to be quick here. Let's see. According to the ACLU's letter, a message in March newsletter asked parents to pray to God to give students strength, mental fortitude, patience, and wisdom as they prepare for the state-mandated testing. Now, I wonder if that's, like, implying, they're against, or the state's against us or something. A teacher said the principal's messages would still be well received even if he practiced another religion. There's some more of the typical stuff, but this is just, the two articles together, but especially this a prayer about their test, gives you a flavor of, like stuff in the South, I guess. And also, I've had a lot of people tell me today, Happy Easter. And I just say, you too, But that, I don't know if that comes up in the North as much as it would in the South. Anyway, that's a few things I just thought I'd bring them up, for Southern flavor.
Bob had a couple things I wanted to ask about. First thing, and I'm going to make an admission during this wrap. The first thing is that I'm hearing from more people outside of some of the people in this group that are saying when I ask them, what are we going to do about the circumstances in the larger society? And they say, well, we might have been able to do something to save to save the society or save the country or the culture or whatever from going in the direction it's going a few years ago. But we've gone past the point of, of we've gone past the point of no return. And they just say, well, and I say, well, what are we going to do? And they just say, well, we're just going to die quietly. That's the first thing. And then the second thing, I don't understand this attitude about, you know, this negative attitude about gay, lesbian, transgendered folks. Because first of all, I live in Berkeley and San Francisco, and I'm going to make an admission here. When I was in high school, without knowing about gay, you know, gay folks or lesbian folks or anything like that, I, you know, had attitudes about people who acted according to what I thought, you know, to certain stereotypes that we assign to gay men and that kind of thing. And that was in high school, and that's pretty low coming from a guy who's a disabled person whose parents put him in an institution. But I was living in the institution at that time. And then when I came up to Berkeley, it was like all of that stuff went away, and I was working with people who were straight, gay, what have you, lesbian, you know, transgendered and all of that. So my attitude changed in the moment that I, you know, my attitude changed, you know, in the moment, and it was never a virulent anti-attitude, but, you know, but my attitude changed in the moment that I came up to Berkeley, no sweat. So I can't understand why people have to hold on to their, you know, to their anti-attitudes for so long. I mean, it just, you know, all people have to do is move to another part of the country and immerse themselves around a wide variety of people, and they would lose the and they would lose these prejudices.
Well, everybody can't do that, Larry. For one, Berkeley couldn't hold them. But what you point out is, or what you draw attention to, is the fact that when one is exposed to a multicultural, multi-viewpoint existence, things prioritize themselves rather quickly. In all but the most hard cases. I think about, because I'm always thinking about movies, and I assume by now it's safe to give away the ending. I remember Kevin Spacey's performance in American Beauty, and the end, and the way that movie ended, when the really, really butch, uptight Marine Corps veteran goes to, you know, homophobic and everything, goes to kiss Kevin Spacey right on the mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, I mean, that leads to the ending of the movie, but you're going to have those people out there. You got a lot of closeted people, okay? You've got a lot of people who live in their bigotry because the bigotry is what they've been brought up in. You're soaking in it. As the old commercial tagline used to say. So, you know, it's good that you had that experience because you learned to be tolerant because you lived in intolerant circumstances. But everywhere ain't Berkeley, okay? You know, maybe, I mean, there's a lot of LGBTQQQ, children on the streets now because their parents can't be tolerant. All right? And of course, you know, don't expect for a minute that all of these evangelical fundamentalist churches are suddenly going to become tolerant because the intolerance works for them. The intolerance brings in $800,000 for a stupid little mom and pop pizza joint, okay? If Bart Cop, wherever his whole soul may or may not be, used to say, if somebody makes a mistake and it makes them $1 million, expect them to keep on making the same mistake.
And Bob, you know, one thing is, I think that people want more than just to be tolerated, you know. I mean, that's great, but it could be just, hey, accepted and just normal you know.
Yeah, Jack, you're absolutely right. Tolerance, you know, tolerance is a loaded word.
That's right.
What we're talking about when we say tolerance, most of us in this kind of a community, we're talking about acceptance.
Yes.
I mean, if you're working in some shitty corporate job, but then again, there are no bad jobs in the crumbling empire anymore. But let's say you're working some corporate job, and you're clacking away at your keyboard in your hellish little 21st century existential nightmare cubicle, and there's a transgendered person clacking away in the cubicle next to you. You know what? It's not about tolerance. It's about acceptance, because you're both in the same boat. You're both in the you're both clacking your lives away in some shitty little corporate cubicle, and that's how it goes. And your problems are not who's got what sexuality or who has what gender, but why are you living an existential hell in a 4x4 cubicle? That's your question.
Yeah, and to the people that are telling me or that are suggesting to me outside of this group, and there are a few people in this group that are saying we've gone past the point of no return on trying to fix any of these problems, and I have people outside that are now saying that we've gone so far, we're so far gone with our political and social institutions and system that there's probably is going to be no way we can bring things back to some kind of semblance of normality. Do anybody have any comments to make about that kind of observation? I guess.
Well,
you sound normal.
Well, sure. Laws can be made and laws can be unmade. I don't buy into that we've gone past the point of no return. We've done a lot of bad shit in our history. In the 40s, we interned Americans into camp that were of a certain race. And now we look back upon that and say, hey, that was a pretty shitty thing to do. That wasn't right. So we do learn from the bad things we do. How much we learn from that? Well, that's all a matter of perspective. But I don't buy into that. We can't fix it. I think that's just a defeatist attitude, and it's not healthy.
And News Ninja Carol Baker passes her regards and wishes she was in the chat this evening. But she's got a question for Larry, and it kind of goes to questions that Larry you frequently ask. And I guess this would maybe qualify as a little bit of tough love. Carol says, Larry, just what the fuck are you doing to make the world a better place? It's not always about asking the questions. It's about going and doing something. And this is not, this is not to say you're not doing. This is to say focus on doing. Well, I guess we could, those of us raised in a certain tradition could cite the first chapter of the book of James. Oh, God, I feel icky just doing this, where it says, be ye doers of the word and not hearers only. And to a certain extent, that's why I encourage and we try to build a community of activism. Nobody has to change the world, but if we can change a little bit, the world can change. Make any sense?
What you're saying is try to do what I can do. And I think Carol's criticism is warranted, and she's not the only one that has mentioned this. Timmy has also mentioned that to me, too. And the thing is that right now the only thing I can say is that I'm not doing anything of an activist nature other than if you can consider getting knowledge, getting training. And being aware of things, yeah, I'm doing that. But am I doing anything activist like being a lawyer or being a social worker or anything like that? No, I'm not. Not at this time, no.
Larry, I'd like to offer a little advice. Take it if you want it. This is what I'm doing. I'm actively seeking candidates
who share the same ideals that I do, the same ideals that we do in this group. And I'm supporting those candidates. I'm trying to find people to run for these offices at the state and local levels, even the federal levels, too, if that opportunity would arise. But that's what I'm doing. You know, do your own thing, but do something, I think is what Carol's trying to say. And I wish you were here, but...
I had a comment on that, if I may. I think having knowledge available, you know, is a good thing. But what I would say is every once in a while you can take a look at what you're gathering information about or what you're learning and see, can I really apply that to some situation that I care about? So you can direct it more, that direct your what you're learning.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. And there have been other people in this group that have made the same suggestion, albeit using different language and in different situations, that have said that to me. Yes.
And the important thing, and this has broad application, Larry, is what the importance of it is, you know, you don't, you know, you mentioned I'm not being a social worker, I'm not being a lawyer. That ain't how you define it. It's do something. And this is, you know, well, this is just part of my own cultural milieu. The late, great Alabama football coach Bear Bryant used to have a saying, and it was on, I'm told that it was on the wall of the locker room, make something happen. Make something happen.
The thing is, it doesn't have to be anything great and defining. I mean, volunteer to work on some campaigns for some
people. Well, and I know for a fact...
You know, stuff envelopes, anything.
Look, I know for a fact that Larry's done stuff. And,
exactly.
and whether or not you recognize it as activism or not, it is important. The reason we have one of the co-sponsors we have on the ACAC, we have because Larry, in an inspiring action, went through all it means for Larry to get out of his house and travel and get on public transport, and went and insisted that Barbara Lee become a co-sponsor of the ACAC, and this is back in 2012. And we've had no problem getting her on the subsequent bills when they were reintroduced. And that's Larry's doing, and that's activism.
And there you go.
Cool.
Yeah. Great. Okay. Thank you.
Well, you sure know who you talk to, that's for sure.
Well, because I happen to live
I think it's important, you know, don't think because you have not caused the planet to wobble on its axis that you're not doing anything. Make the effort to do something. That's why when I'm talking about the ACE Act, and you know, I beg people, I encourage people to take action. And you know what? Taking action is as simple as a phone call, or as easy as an email. And people write to me and say, you know, I'm still stay. I had a note the other night from, we heard it on air from Gary, who provided last night's challenge. He said, I'm still after my member of Congress, and I'll stay after it. And that's activism. You know, it's activism. I don't want to over-dramatize it or anything, but you know what? It's activism if you haven't seen your neighbor come out of their house for a few days, and you just peck on the door and say, hey, you okay? That's activism. It's activism. If you volunteer at a shelter, it's activism. If you volunteer with a civic group that just cleans up the side of the damn road, it's activism. If you participate, I remember back in the 2004 presidential campaign, we used our own phones here to do phone banking for Dennis Kucinich. And I mean, there's a million ways to get active. You just have to find the getting active that works for you. And Larry has certain limitations, but Larry also has certain gifts. You know, I was sitting here listening. Larry's got a beautiful voice. I mean, it's a radio voice.
Yeah.
And it could easily inspire people. Because there's a lot of people out there, you know, we got a shit ton more listeners to this radio network than we have callers to. Because and I get the notes from people saying, you know, I'd love to call in, but I get really nervous on the phone. And sometimes people who are nervous call the program anyway. And I say, you're going to survive this. You're going to get through it. You're going to be just fine. And so, you know, there's a million opportunities.
Well, doing an interview show might be a good thing to do. You know, something like that. I was talking with Dunk about it earlier. Not today, but a few days ago. Doing some kind of a show. But, you know, I could do that. Anyway, but thank you very much for the kick in the...
And Larry, I ask myself a lot, or I try to, if what I'm doing is leading to anything or is actually doing any good. So I got that I ask myself all the time.
I think the most important thing to take away from all of this, and this is just my opinion, don't give up. Don't just lay down and say, we can't win. You know, don't give up because history has a way of, you know, turning around. Like I mentioned before, we interned Japanese Americans in the 40s, and we realized that's a pretty shitty thing to do. And we don't do that now. Mm-hmm. But, you know, don't give up. Don't ever give up because when you give up, that's the end of it.
Yeah. Okay.
We don't do that anymore. Oh, prison.
Yeah. Well.
And also, I would like to add this. I just got back in here just a little bit ago. I had a phone call, but activism isn't necessarily trying to do everything at once, but it's what you can do when you're able to do so. And what I did this week. I wasn't able to go all week up there to Little Rock, but I was able to make phone calls. I was able to email. I did those things. Mm-hmm. But I also drove an hour's drive one way to the state capitol because I could not sit there and watch this without taking action myself. Because if I had just sit there and just talked about, well, people should do this, and me not done it when I had an opportunity, then I'd be a hypocrite about it.
Yeah.
And in many ways, I think the word activism, starting somewhere around 2007, got severely overworked. Because it makes it sound like it's something you can get a degree in. When in reality, it might in former times have simply been classified as giving a fuck. Okay, and you know I speak kind of bluntly and brutally on that, but it's the truth. This sort of brings me to a relevant present current story. Here in West Virginia, there are over, and I'm sure Gerald's already aware of this story. There are over 100 families who are being sued by a shit-eating pipeline company. And they're being sued in an effort to get the court to compel these landowners who own the surface rights, okay? They own the surface rights to their property. Uh-huh. And they're being sued by this pipeline company trying to get a circuit judge in this state to compel those landowners to allow the pipeline company to come on their land for purposes of surveying the land for where they plan to put the pipeline, whether the landowners want it or not.
Sounds like what white folks did to Native Americans back in the...
Well, and it's...
term for it. It's called eminent domain.
But eminent domain is supposed to be used rarely, and it's supposed to be used for the broad public good, not massive corporate profits. And this state, I would argue, has had damned well enough abuse by the extraction industry. And if this pipeline company says, well, you know, what they did 100 years ago is not our fault. Bullshit. You are part of an ongoing legacy of abuse. And the reason nobody owns their mineral rights in this state is because of similar abuse that took place 125 years ago in the form of something that was called the Broad Form Deed, where ignorant, sometimes illiterate, hillbilly settlers who had been on the land for five or six generations sold away their mineral rights for next to nothing. And were promptly ensnared in what we can call wage slavery by the corporations. It was done by the land companies, the railroad companies, and the coal companies. And now the latest inheritor of that shameful legacy are these pipeline bastards. And you know what? All I was going to say by in the way of finishing is that standing up and resisting having your own shit taken away from you is activism, but we act like activism is a thing when all it is caring enough to stand up on your own hind legs and act like a human being.
And I would add to this story that you just told, the pipeline companies will court shop until they find a judge that will rule in their favor.
But they are.
I got a kind of bizarre question here that might want to come into this.
Okay.
If you own some property and you don't pay property taxes on it for a period of time, the ownership of that property reverts to the county, and the county can do whatever they want, or the state can do whatever they want. I want to know whether or not these people that own the mineral rights have been paying any property taxes on their ownership of that property, lo these many years, or whether it was even assessed. And if they haven't been paying property taxes on their mineral rights, those mineral rights should have expired and reverted to the landowner that is paying the property taxes on the surface dirt.
Nice theory. Won't fly.
I wish it were that simple. It would be nice.
First of all, their property... let's put it this way. To give you an idea of the scope and amount of property taxes paid on unsevered minerals, Roger, I pay more property tax on this crummy 80-year-old falling-down house and 1 acre of surface every year than a coal company pays for 1,000 acres of unmined coal.
It's pennies on the dollar, or a penny on the dollar.
Well, yeah, it's more like pennies. Pennies.
Yeah, I understand that.
Pennies on the thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
But the reality is, not that I'm encouraging anybody to engage in violence. I'm not.
Yes, you are.
No, I'm not. No, I'm really not, Tracy. Stop helping. But these are hillbillies we're talking about. And these are hillbillies who have been shoved around for 150 years or more. And there is a tradition here of you can have, you know, I hate to cite that stupid libertarian thing about washing your melon or whatever, but there's you can have it if you can take it attitude. And the reason this pipeline company thinks it has the right to enter on people's property is because they own the minerals, or because of eminent domain, or because the mineral owner has said, well, you know, there's a million different theories. But all of those theories aren't worth much when you show up in your truck and somebody walks out the door with a 30-06 or a double-barreled 12-gauge. Now they will come and take it, but they will come and take your ass to jail. But there's not a jury in this state that would convict. Do you agree, Gerald? I'm not saying anybody's getting shot.
I would agree. I know I would hang that jury if I were on it. Yes, I agree. I mean, if the jury were to try to convict, I would not convict someone for defending their own property against something like that.
Now, right, because what would do, you know, we're nobody's discharging the weapon, but you just walk out the door with great grandpa's double-barreled shotgun cradled in your arms. You know, maybe you're walking out to go and make sure that the groundhogs are behaving themselves. Or you heard about
make
a rabbit?
Make a baseball bat.
Yeah, a rabbit.
Make it a baseball bat. It doesn't have to be a gun. Make it a baseball bat.
Sure. Okay. Good. Just going out to play a little baseball with the kid. You like baseball. I like baseball. And saying now, son, I realize somebody give you a paycheck to come here, but I'd suggest you get off my property right quick, or I'm going to call the law. And if he's got any brains, he'll get away, and then he'll run and cry to his corporate boss, and the corporate boss will say, "Why, how dare he?" And
get back down there and tell him what for.
Yeah, and that's where if he's got any sense, the guy who's working for pissant wages says, "No, you tell him. I'm going to go get a job at Walmart." But that's the reality.
A female friend of mine sold some land to the fracker. Yes, a deal with the frackers. They gave her half the money. When they were supposed to pay the other half, they won't pay it. Because they came in there and fracked. And they found nothing they could make money off. Nothing they could steal and make money off of. Her land is right up against the arsenal down in the south of here. There's a big arsenal that's been in business since before World War I. But they fracked her land. They didn't find anything. They didn't want to pay her the other half of the money. That's how straight up these guys are. They get worse and worse every day.
Here's a good story about energy companies stealing from people, and I guarantee Bob knows this story. Out in Roan County, which is what started that whole lawsuit. Yeah. The name Bob. What? Shit. It's right up front.
Roy God Hildreth.
No. The guy that started the suit.
Oh, shoot.
He's dead now.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Anyway, basically, the story goes, guy owns some property, owns a lot of property actually in the county, and has several wells drilled. The gas companies say, "Hey, we've got the mineral rights, we'll pay you the royalties, we'll meter the gas, it's gas wells." Let me clarify that. So they drill their wells and everything's great, the royalty checks, and there's a whole lot more to this, but the quick and the dead of it is, they had bypasses on those meters that were supposed to be closed, so all of the gas was being metered. But if you leave a bypass slightly open or half open or whatever it was,
you're going to be stealing some gas.
Yeah, and you don't have to pay the property owner all the royalties. And the property owner figured it out and took NiSource was the company who was then bought out by Chesapeake. They took them to court and won. The jury awarded millions and millions of dollars to a lot of property owners because it became a class action suit. Because they weren't just doing it to, the name almost came to me. They weren't just doing it to him. They were doing it to everybody.
Yeah, it was what the law calls a pattern in practice.
Yeah, well, whatever the law calls it, it's wrong, and they ended up having to pay. I think they started out like $300 and some million, and it ended up like 160 or something like that. But these are the kind of people that are in the extraction industry. I mean, they will steal from the people who they made a deal with. Plain and simple. I'm done.
I mean, it's predicated on it. Shares of wells traditionally. The way you hustled up the money to drill it originally, and this has been going on over in the oil and gas patch, which extends down from mineral wells in Wood County down through Wirt County into Jackson County, Roan County, Calhoun County, West Virginia. You would sell 1/32nd share. You would sell shares in 30 seconds. The only thing is, the folks in the oil and gas industry tended to sell 64 or 128 30 seconds. So people have been conned for 125 years in the oil and gas industry. And that place that area over there had cancer clusters before anybody ever wondered about why people were so sick in the mountaintop removal sacrifice zone. I think I may have told it on the late night, or maybe I told it on air, about our beloved yellow Labrador retriever who went swimming in the pond outside the house we lived in many, many years ago, and came out from swimming, and a few days later she didn't have a hair on her. Now, this is a Labrador retriever that lives for swimming. Well, that pond was poisoned with the after effects of oil and gas drilling. And now I've found out that my grandchildren live triangulated between three frac pads or three gas wells that give off toxins 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So, yeah, it's a filthy, nasty, dirty, awful, hateful business.
Woody Guthrie said it best. I said, through this world I see travel, I see lots of funny men. Some rob you with a six-gun, some with a fountain pen.
And the fountain pen did the vast majority of it here.
Oh,
Garrison,
yeah.
Tawny, that's who that was.
Tawny.
Yeah.
That's a big Roan County name.
Yeah, $338.8 million was the lawsuit that was settled.
And the oil and gas industry is still pissing and moaning about it.
Yeah, they actually got so mad about it that they pulled their, they had a headquarters here in Charleston. They were going to build a new one, big X-million-dollar building, and they said, well, we just feel we can't, with the business climate in West Virginia, we feel we can't build this here. So they took their toys and they left. But you know what? If that's the kind of business they are, I just assume they weren't here anyway.
Well, but they couldn't take the gas with them, so sooner or later they'll be back. But yeah, who hey-bobbed me?
It's me, Tim.
Hey, Tim.
I got a sort of legal question.
I'm not a lawyer.
Right. But I thought about what you said a while ago about, you know, the religious freedom thing, going back to religious freedom again. But then I started to think about it even more. And I did some research of the religion. It's West African called Vodun, V-O-D-U-N.
Yeah, it comes to us as voodoo.
And it's a closely held belief that they allow human sacrifices. The question is, murder isn't a federal offense by, you know.
Well, some murders are federal offenses, Tim.
Right. But in that case, though, can't Indiana prosecute them for murder?
Sure they could.
Even under religious freedom.
There's a good bit of case law back there that supports no illegal acts. That a church cannot be a sanctuary for those who would, and that's why ultimately, even though it was done as a protest, that's why ultimately the First Church of Cannabis, even though their papers have been accepted for filing by the Indiana Secretary of State, will fail.
At the federal level?
It'll fail on the state level. Because cannabis is illegal in the state of Talibandiana.
Okay, so is... Oh.
But the thing is... The 1993 federal RFRA was passed specifically to keep, for instance, indigenous peoples from being persecuted because they use peyote as a sacrament or something like that. But the thing is, that is a clearly definable protected class of people. You cannot clearly define as a protected class of people who want to smoke dope in Indiana and call it a religion. It's admittedly a slippery slope, but it's also the reality, because anybody who thinks that Talibandiana's religious freedom law was going to protect I joke about it, but let's say there are still followers of Huitzilopochtli, and you have to periodically cut the heart out of somebody at the top of the pyramid and throw the beating heart into the mouth of the idol of the god in order to keep Tonatiuh from destroying the planet. Or Huitzilopochtli, rather. from destroying the planet. The religion's legitimate. It was practiced by millions upon millions of people. Now, the fact that a genocide was committed against them by the Spaniards, that doesn't change the fact that it was their legitimate religion. There's lots of different... anybody who has ever seen Richard Harris in that 70s film, A Man Called Horse, about the white guy who goes to live among the Mandan people, well, there's that... I mean, it was shocking for its time. During a ritual in which he becomes a member of the tribe, or that's the way it's portrayed, or whatever, hawk's claws attached to ropes are dug into the flesh of his pectoral muscles. And he is then hauled up by those ropes inside the lodge with all the, you know, all the men of the tribe watching and everything. And that goes to a ceremony they had called First Man Hung Up, which led some early 19th century explorers to think that it was some sort of, well, it all tied into their ancient Welshman and Prince Madoc, and they swore that they were speaking words out of the Welsh language and yada, 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 trying to whiten up the Indians a little bit. But there are religious practices that need to be protected by clearly established religious protected groups.
Well, the law can be selected then.
Sure it can. The law is always selected. I mean, for instance, just to give you a good idea, if you ever sit in an evidence class. You'll be engaged in a discussion about the nexus between relevance and probity and prejudice. All evidence is prejudicial,
right,
to one side or the other, because it's an adversarial system. So evidence is going to operate in favor of one side or the other. So the question becomes within the rules. Does the probative value, in other words, the ability of the evidence to prove something one way or the other, outweigh its prejudicial effect? And if yes, on we go. If it's just going to be prejudicial and it doesn't necessarily prove anything, it gets excluded. So there's always discrimination inside any legal structure.
But just watching the news, Pence gave the impression that, oh, we will discriminate against religious, blah, 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 yada, yada, yada.
No, that was so much libertarian horse shit, Tim. Because he said, and I remarked on this, you may have not heard, but he said, yeah, if I saw someone discriminating against a gay couple, I would leave that restaurant, and thereby we're all supposed to go, oh, see, Governor Pence doesn't really hate the gays. But nobody fell for it, because that's just a line of libertarian crap. Because it's one thing to say, well, I'm leaving. I will, my libertarian values and the free market will not tolerate your discrimination. See? Look here, my good man. Not bullshit. The purpose of government is to create structures within society whereby everybody has at least a fair shot at that whole pursuit of happiness thing.
Right.
Well, Republicans don't believe in that. They believe in a discriminatory governance, form of governance, where only the elect do well. And the measure of your electness comes straight out of the nastiest parts of Calvinism, in which if you are wealthy, it means God likes you better. And in point of fact, I wanted to bring this up because... last week, Bob in Texas was a huge help in helping us finish out March. And he sent me an article either last night or this morning about the roots of evangelical Christianity. And in particular, it was focused on Billy Graham. And Billy Graham, of course, gets a pass from a lot of people. Oh, you know, he was just preaching Jesus. Bullshit. because and I got to see about maybe getting this guy on the air. I don't know if I can or not, but there's a book out now that people might find quite interesting. The name of the book, I'm waiting for the page to load now. Anytime. Poor old, tired, old, worn-out internet. God dang it. Hang on.
By the way, Bob?
Oh, yeah.
I wanted to say that I got a response from Carol. It said, Larry, I love you.
Well, wait. Maybe that's private, Larry.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Okay. I'm sorry.
Just to stay on track with the topic, the book is One Nation Under God, How Corporate America Invented Christian America. It is by, it's coming out apparently soon. It's by Kevin Cruz, K-R-U-S-E. And he describes the rise of Billy Graham. And he says, back in the 1930s, business leaders found themselves on the defensive. Their public prestige had plummeted with a great crash. Their private businesses were under attack by Franklin D. Roosevelt's New Deal from above and labor from below. To regain the upper hand, corporate leaders fought back on all fronts. They waged a figurative war in state houses and occasionally a literal one in the streets. Their campaigns extended from courts of law to the court of public opinion. But nothing worked particularly well until they began an inspired public relations offensive that cast capitalism as the handmaiden of Christianity. And it talks, and the author goes on to talk about how people like Harvey Firestone, Conrad Hilton, E.F. Hutton, Fred Maytag, Henry Luce, among many others, funded the co-opting of the religion industry. In a shrewd decision, these executives made clergymen their spokesman. As Sun Oil's J. Howard Pugh noted, polls proved that ministers could mold public opinion more than any other profession, and so these businessmen worked to recruit clergy through private meetings and public appeals. Here's where Billy Graham comes in. The most important clergyman for Christian libertarianism was the Reverend Billy Graham. In his initial ministry in the early 1950s, Mr. Graham supported corporate interests so zealously that a London paper called him, quote, the big business evangelist. The Garden of Eden, Graham informed revival attendees, was a paradise with no union dues, no labor leaders, no snakes, no disease. And in the same spirit, he denounced all government restrictions in economic affairs, which he invariably attacked as socialism. Next question, you know.
Bob, let me interject something here. Graham was dragged in to meet Truman, President Truman. And Truman had to do everything but practically put his foot behind him and push him out the door. And Truman just went nuts after the thing. Who brought that guy in here? And you can find that in his, the one good biography of him that was out in the 80s of Truman. Because he was just, what the hell, who the hell brought this fool in here? Because he didn't want to hear it.
Right, and
a lot of things.
Yeah, but yet Graham found his way into every president's office since that point. And it's trumpeted, advisor to every president since Harry S. Truman. When Harry S. Truman thought he was a freaking clown, because he was.
Yeah.
And eventually he winds up sitting in the Oval Office with a deeply paranoid, raving Richard Nixon, in which Richard Nixon looks at him and says, well, you know, Billy, we could get America back on the right path. You know, we could, Billy, if it weren't for the Jews. The Jews in Hollywood, Billy, it's the Jews. And to which Billy Graham replied, I do believe you are correct, Mr. President. But, you know, I really don't know, but, you know, it's a case, Bill, of what John Huston said in I got the clip right here. I mean, you know, because everybody reveres Billy Graham now that he's just some nonagenarian waiting in God's waiting room. But no, Jack Nicholson. Forget about it. Chinatown. Chinatown. Well, there's a scene where John Huston, playing the plutocratic billionaire, says the following.
Politicians, ugly buildings, and whores all get respectable if they last long enough.
There you go. And, yeah. You know, and huckster evangelists.
Yeah. So, I guess what you're saying here is that all these evangelists are clowns.
Well, no. If it was that simple, it would be easy. It is that they are doing the active bidding of their capitalist masters.
Yep.
It's a way, because that's the way capital has always behaved. And hey, we are 9 minutes away from the end of the program, and I hate to sound pushy or desperate, but I got to mention it again that we came into the program on a good footing to, you know, end the first week of April in good form. Had only $150 to raise. Our buddy Mo Liberal jumped out front and cut that down to $125, and Mo Liberal has stood there pretty much all by himself all evening, and nothing further has happened. If anybody would like to join in with him so that we can get this down to zero and not start more in Monday in a hole, that would be monumentally helpful. It really, really would. So, you know where the PayPal button is. I trust if you use the Postal Service, you know what the address is by now. But it would be nice to knock off that last $125 because, well, we're trying to stay current with the bills, and that's hard to do when we don't meet the individual evening's goals. And I apologize for mentioning it every night. I say I'll mention it at the top of the program. Hopefully it'll be taken care of, and I won't mention it again. And here I am mentioning it again, and I'm sorry. Oh, but by the way, I wanted to share something with you on the way out the door. Carol pointed this out to me. There is a fascinating article by Manny Shevitz. Get it?
Manny Shevitz.
Yeah. Over at forwardprogressives.com. Forwardprogressives.com. This is where our good friend Aaron Nanasi writes. Manny is her editor. And it is a deconstruction of the whole Memories Pizza hustle, in which these poor, put-upon, persecuted Christian pizza makers have been suddenly blessed by the Almighty with $0.8 million. And where that hustle came from and who was behind it, I don't want to give away the article, but, hey, look, who, what? James O'Keefe? The right-wing fraud merchant and maker of bullshit documentaries? How could he possibly come into this story? Well, he kind of does in a sort of tangential way. So you got to go over to forwardprogressives.com and read the Indiana Memories Pizza Fundraiser is a conservative media scam.
Oh, boy. When you have
quite a bunch of crappy ass. I'm sorry.
When you have a constituency that can be scammed so easy.
Yep, you're right.
By the way, Bob, I got a question. Last night you mentioned the link to where that Charleston nuclear bomb story came from. Can you send that to me? Because I didn't catch the link last night.
I didn't put it out there for common consumption, I'll find it. Sparky sent it to me, and I'll find it and send it to you.
You still got it, Bob?
Yeah, I still got it.
Oh, I emailed it to you, right?
Right.
Okay.
I thought you mentioned it last time.
Well, I didn't give out the URL for it. No.
Oh, okay.
From 1861 to 1865, there was a lot of guys wearing blue that would have loved to create a nuclear disaster in Charleston.
Well, but, you know, they just used a couple of books. They didn't burn Charleston, did they?
No. No, they bypassed it. They took this to the Union Navy.
Oh,
in Charleston.
Yeah, they took their book of matches to Richmond, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, they renovated Richmond with a book of matches.
Well, the thing about that
that mess around Charleston, that's where the Massachusetts Infantry, the Black Regiment, that's where they fought. And there was a movie about those guys. I forget what it was called. I forget what I was called, you know. No, I remember that. My wife repeated it many times. But, yeah, that 57th Massachusetts. They made a movie about an all-black regiment.
Yeah, Glory.
Saw heavy combat.
Yeah,
Glory, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it is time to get out of here, and let me thank Jack for jumping in and taking us down to only $100 to go to finish the evening to the good. Thank you very kindly, Jack. It is much appreciated. And I will wish all of you a good weekend, but with a reminder that the Horn Malloy Skype chat group continues after the Malloy program closes at about 5 after midnight. And if you've never sat through the late night or, well, depending on where you are, hours of the Horn Malloy Skype chat after hours, wow, what a blast it is. So if you've never been in it, you want to jump into it, you can always send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, and you too can be part of the conversation that has been going on Friday nights for how many years, Sparky?
We're starting our seventh year.
Wow, just 3 years younger than the Horn itself. Amazing. Aw, Jim, that's not very nice. Jim just sent a note. Not a very good program. Well, that's hurtful. Well, I think it was a dandy. And I will leave it to the rest of you to make that determination yourself. But if you weren't happy, well, darn. My weekend is, I guess, diminished a little bit. But it's time to get out of here one way or the other because it's a little more than 2 minutes to go before the top of the hour. Thank you, Kevin and Bill, over on the Gizmo line. And thank you to everybody joining in on the Skype line. Thank you, Sparky, as ever. Thank you, Gerald. Thank you, Larry. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Roger. Thank you, Carol Abel. Thank you, Haley. Thank you, Barbie. I'm sorry you couldn't get your microphone working, but hi, Barbie.
It's working now.
Oh, well, I'll be dipped. Yeah. Well, there you were, hiding your light under a bushel. Thank you, Jack and Shreveport, and thank you, Tim. And thank all of you for keeping all of this going. And thank you for very kindly for, the finite, precious time you spend listening to the program, even if it's not a very good program. Thank you. And thanks, of course, go out to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky, in the Horn chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan and Carol Baker. Thank you to John Fox in Australia for all his technical expertise. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACACT, ACHEACT.org. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. Have a wonderful weekend, everyone. See you back for more on Monday.